Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, and thank you for joining us today. This is Kelly Barner, editor at Buyer's Meeting Point. Today, I would like to welcome back Michael Robertson, the CEO of Pod Procurement and the author of the Pod Model, the mutually beneficial model for buyers and suppliers, which enables an increase in profit through commercial collaboration. Mike recently joined me to discuss his book, and I will include a link to that podcast on today's episode page. Today, however, Mike is back so that we can explore a topic that emerged during our last conversation. And that is how procurement communicates about our contract. Mike, thanks for coming back to BMP Radio.
Thank you very much, Kelly, and thank you for the opportunity to come back onto BMP and talk to the members here.
So, if you would, could you just start us off by talking a little bit about how contracts in today's business climate need to be much more than just static legal documents? They, in fact, need to be an active opportunity to drive the business in a new direction?
Absolutely. I'm going to start off with just one beginning sentence, which is what I really want people to think about at the end of our talk today. Procurement are sitting on more business value than anybody ever has realized, and that's the key thing I want people to realize, that you're on a huge amount of business value. It's just articulating that's the challenge. So the focus we're really looking at is the contracts and the value-added contracts. But in order to really discuss that, I just want to take 2 minutes out to think about what is the word value. It's one of the things we've all been striving for, especially within, when I say procurement, I mean procurement, function, and contract management. Everybody's been striving for business value. But what does it actually mean? Well, first off, value is something that is awarded to you by the recipient. You don't do value, you deliver something, and someone sees value in you. So we need to remember that value is all about the eye of the beholder, the other person, the recipient. When we think about someone like a heart surgeon, they talk about atriums and ventricles and supervena cavas, which are all functions of the heart, or do they talk about, let's improve your blood flow to ensure you don't faint when you stand up? When we talk about a ship's captain, do they talk about bow thrusters, both the scales and charties? Or do they talk about, let's improve the docking speed to ensure you get on your holiday just a little bit quicker? My point being is that it's important how you articulate what you're achieving in the context to the ears of the person you're talking to. So that's what we need to think about when we think about value. Now let's apply that to what we talk about as contracts. When we think about a contract, many people think about it being a legal document that defines a process and performance and manages failure. And does that really have any business value? Well, if that's all we think a contract is, it doesn't have business value. So the bigger question is that really all the contract is? And I would challenge you and say, no, I think it's a huge amount of value. It just hasn't been articulated. So we said value is about talking to the language of the recipient. So we're talking to the business. What kind of language do they want to hear? Well, I would suggest they're talking about things like speed to market, reducing business costs, increasing efficiencies, budget management. They're the kind of things that the business wants to hear. What they don't necessarily want to hear is things like P2P category management, liabilities, indemnities, step-in clauses. They aren't actually any of the words that would resonate with the business that make them think about value. So let's think about what would actually be a contract value. And I'll give you a couple of examples. The first one I want to think about is this. Imagine you are going into a scenario where the business has called you into the room and said, we'd like to procure the following goods, we'd like to have them on Monday, and we want them as cheap as possible. And you leave the room and all the way back down to your offices, you're so frustrated the fact that you're seen as an executioner of a transaction rather than a business advisor. So that's where a lot of people sit today. But let's try that scenario in a slightly different way. The business calls you in and said, we'd like to purchase the following goods. We like them Monday and we want them as cheap as possible. And before you leave, you respond by explaining what you're going to do. You say something like this. Thank you, business leader. I've heard your requirements. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to put a contract in place that maximizing your savings opportunity to get the maximum value out of your budget. And at the same time, I'm going to ensure we assign the budget to the contract to deter the business from reallocating that budget to another project. Now, what you've just spoken there is a few words, didn't take much, that started to make the business leader, the budget holder, think that was unusual, that was different. What did you do there? You haven't actually done anything other than articulated what the value is of the contract you're about to put in place for them. So let's just roll this on to a couple of weeks later, and you're asked by that business unit to come in again, and they say, right, we're going to purchase the following goods, and we'd like you to procure them as quickly as possible, please. And you say, absolutely. And based on what I've just heard you say, what I'm going to do is I'm going to put a contract in place that maximizes your flexibility to respond to business changes and market changes. I'm going to increase your speed to market and demonstrate a desire to work with the supplier of choice. So what you're starting to do here is you're starting to articulate points of the contract that actually mean something to the ears of the recipient, to the business leaders. So if we take that principle further, imagine the third engagement you have with this business leader. They call you in and they say, we're about to procure some goods and we're wondering if you can advise us on what our contracting options are. And the reason why they're doing that is because you started to articulate a level of business acumen that they can relate to. So rather than you just being an executioner of the process, you're starting to become a business advisor, and all you've had to do was unlock the value that's already sat in your contracts today. The challenge for most people is identifying what that value is inside the contract. And that's a challenge that procurement and contract management are facing that all around the world in all different industries. What is the value we're sitting on, and how do we actually communicate that in a way that is important to the recipient we're talking to?
Well, and I think, so if we're focusing on trying to communicate differently about the contracts in sort of an outward-facing way, so if procurement needs to better understand the context in which we are discussing the business that's going to happen during the term of the contract, and really take advantage of the circumstances to accomplish everything that is possible and position our contribution in the right way, we probably need to start thinking about contracts differently before we actually start to discuss them in different terms, or I would think it's going to come across as somewhat awkward and inauthentic.
Absolutely agree. So one of the key questions for the listener to think about today is, can they really identify the type of contract they use today in their business? Quite a few organizations we've worked with will typically use maybe just one or two types of contract, and they'll adapt that to whatever they're doing within the market. But there are so many different types, and I'll just give you a list just to refresh your memory of some of the types that we've got out there. We've got piggyback contracts, we've got framework agreements, we've got committed contracts, uncommitted contracts, hybrid contracts, we've got fixed price, we've got pre-agreed price models, and the list goes on. So we've got a huge plethora of contracts and commercial models that we can apply to address different business challenges. And it's important that you understand why there exist in the market today. Why have we got so many? Because each one of those different models apply or provide a different type of benefit to the business. And the capabilities of that contract is what you're looking for. What is the core functionality of that contract? Is it that this type of contract is providing greater flexibility to the business? Or is this one focusing on maximizing the savings? Or is this one focusing on reducing the risk or reducing business costs? Because that's what the contracts are actually doing. And we spend so much time looking at the terms and conditions and the indemnities and warranties and limited liabilities that we forget what the function of the contract ever was. And that's a fundamental element. So you're absolutely right, Kelly. The first thing we need to start thinking about is, what do we use today? What type of contract is it? And what is that business value actually providing us as an industry, as a company? Because that's the information we need to start sharing back with the business. And we might find that we're using contract structures that aren't applicable to what we're trying to achieve as a business. But again, that's where your value comes in, because you can start finding the right type of contract model that reflects what the business is trying to achieve.
And my guess is a lot of that stems historically from the view that you put a contract in place simply to protect the company against risk. And so contracts would be put in place sort of in the same spirit as a prenuptial agreement, people going into marriage. You're putting this thing in place sort of already holding negative connotations about what is ultimately going to happen down the road during the term of time that's covered by this legal document. But instead of locking things down and ultimately, and this goes back to the pod model a little bit, sort of creating a battle over risk, because the more risk you protect yourself from in a contract, traditionally you're escalating the risk of the other parties involved. Rather than using them to lock things down as much as possible, you're actually saying that by choosing the right framework, by choosing the right pricing model or structure, we can use a contract to open things up and really change the way that companies are interacting through this living document.
Absolutely. And you've hit on some absolutely critical points there, Kelly. It's about making sure that we're applying the right kind of contract structure to address the business needs. And because if historically, and I agree with you, 100%, 99% of all organizations will see a contract as nothing more than a way to manage the failure. It's about keeping people out of prison. It's about making sure if we go to court, we've got the best positioning. It's that kind of mentality that has driven contracts into a certain focus area in the business. They don't see it as creating opportunity. It's all about managing risk. If you think about the latest IACCM report. Now, for the listeners who aren't familiar, IACCM is the International Association of Contract and Commercial Management. It's got about 34,000 members globally in this institution, and it's a free-to-join institution, and it's all about contract and procurement, talking about the value of contracts and how they utilize them. And they did a report recently about the top 10 pitfalls that organizations are facing in their contracts. Number six was that contracts lack flexibility. That's the number six, top six pitfall of contracts, is that they lack flexibility. And my counterposition to that is they don't lack flexibility. There are contract structures out there that can give you all the flexibility you could ever want. And yet there are other contracts out there that will give you no flexibility. So when a contract lacks flexibility, it's more probable that you've actually selected the wrong type of contract structure to meet your business requirements. We just always use this type of contract, and so we will now use it today for the next requirements, and yet it doesn't work. So number six is that it lacks flexibility, which leads onto a question, well, why didn't the procurement, the legal team, advise the business to change the contracts? Well, that's interesting, because the second greatest pitfall of contract failure is that legal and contract team are not involved early enough in the decisions. Why might that happen? Because the business isn't seeing value in that discussion. Procurement, legal, contract management are seen as executioners of the outcome, not business advisors on how to achieve it. And if you go back to my earlier on scenario when I said, all you have to do is start articulating that value, and suddenly you'll find that businesses will ask you advice, how do I do this? And that's missing in our engagements today. But if we could start articulating value and the business then starts asking our advice, many of the issues we're facing in contracts today, such as they lack clarity of scope, there's no contract team involved, there's negotiation focused on the wrong terms and risks, the contract's difficult to use. Some of these issues will go away because the reality is contracts aren't that difficult to use if you're using the right one for the right reason. That's the critical point we've got to start thinking about. How do we use contracts applicable to what we're trying to achieve from a business perspective?
And to that point, one of the things that you sort of mentioned in passing just now that I'd like to go back and look at is that there's an awful lot of discussion around procurement's relationship with finance. And, you know, that has its own sort of unique set of alignments and conflicts in it. But the other relationship that does come into play here is procurement's relationship with legal. And when we were talking about contracts and where the effort goes and what these documents are ultimately crafted to achieve, obviously this is a vast oversimplification, but most contracts do have two major parts. They have the pricing structure and the cost model, everything that's sort of locked in from that perspective, which is effectively the domain of procurement. But then there are all of the terms and the legalese, and some of them are driven by the business, but an awful lot of them are sort of the more traditional risk containment, you know, liability assessment type things that make the document the number of pages that it is. Can you talk a little bit about the relationship between legal and procurement, either where it stands today or how it needs to change in order to make what we're discussing about value-oriented contracts possible?
That's a really good question. And if you think about the fundamental element of a contract, as you pointed out there, it's about the legal side of it and making sure that if it goes wrong, if the contract goes wrong, the business is protected. That is not going to go away. That will stay. And so that aspect that we have, we're not talking about we need to forget that, we move on to collaboration. No, we have to have this in the contract. But rather than the focus of everybody looking at the legal terms on how we manage failure, we need to start talking about how we actually encourage collaboration and manage for success. Because though it just sounds like a mental mindset, is the glass half empty or is it half full? It's more than that. Because the contract value, as we mentioned earlier, it's about things like maximizing savings. And some of the aspects we haven't even touched on today is like, how do we unlock collaboration? How do we get our other party in the contract, so be it the supplier or, depending on if you're on the sell side, the customer, how do we get them to see value in our contract with us? Rather than just it's all about me and my contract, how do I get them to see the value in the type of contract we want to use? For example, if I wanted to use a contract where I was not going to commit to purchasing anything, I'm the buyer and I don't want to purchase anything because I have too much risk on my side of the business, we haven't quite made our minds up exactly how much we're going to procure and what type, then I share that information with my supplier of choice. So rather than just throw this 400-page document in front of the supplier saying, read that and tell me about all the clauses you don't like, we explain what the contract is for, what type of contract we're going to be using for, why we're going to be using it, and then when they're looking at the terms and conditions of the contract, they're starting to put them into context. And it's when people put things into context, they can make sense. But when you don't put them into context, and you just put a piece of paper in front of somebody with so many terms and conditions in that they don't know what they're actually trying to achieve, that's when we get a lot of disagreement. And interestingly enough, where's the number? Protracted negotiations, number 10 pitfall, IACCM, or number 5, which is negotiation focus on wrong terms and risks. That's down to communication failure. What is it this contract's trying to do? What is it you're trying to do with it? Because I'm the recipient, so I can understand what context to start looking at these terms and conditions. So we're talking about a wider piece of awakening about the contract value. It's about communicating it not just to the business leaders. It's understanding it ourselves and communicating it to our partner organization, the other half of the contract.
Now, when you think about the altered role that contracts will end up playing, ideally, right, we make these changes, we invest in communicating differently and altering the way we approach contracts. To what extent does the technology that's in place today to support contracts give us the opportunity to accomplish these things and we're just not taking advantage of it? Or effectively just take an archaic process that wasn't creating any value and moving it from a filing cabinet into a computer?
That's a tough question to answer, because there's so many different types of technology out there that you can look at from around a contract management perspective. But the key thing is, in order to communicate value, you don't need a technology. In order to manage value, you probably do. So it's about what you want to do with your contract structure. If you're going to keep them all in your cabinet in a nice big folder, rather than have them electronically controlled and imported into a technology that you can start seeing them, viewing them, and controlling them, managing them, you don't need the technology to talk about the value, but you will probably need the technology to manage that value and maximize that value. Because as we all know, contracts can be incredibly complex. And if procurement's attitude to the contract is, we get it signed, we put it in the drawer, we leave it alone until 5 minutes before the contract renewal, we pull it back out. If that's procurement's attitude to the value of a contract, it's hard to understand why a business would see any more value than that. So in order for procurement to start asking others to see value, procurement needs to start seeing value in it itself, which, if that needs an investment in technology to be able to manage it better, so be it. I'm not mandating that we need technology, but I think that if you look at what technology can do, it can reduce the overheads on the procurement individuals to make it much more efficient to manage the contract, which enables the procurement to get more focus, more time, with the business leaders advising them. So there is an awful lot of value in technology. It's just procuring the right type of technology that is applicable to what you want to do as a business.
So when we started talking today, you sort of laid out to begin with where we would ultimately end up in this conversation. And that was the idea that procurement is sitting on far more value to the business than we realize, and that beyond the challenge of us not fully understanding this value, any benefit that we do recognize, we hit this wall in attempting to communicate it. So if this is an actionable approach, these new models, this new way of regarding and communicating about contracts, and the end goal is to unlock that value, just for the sake of making it realistic to people, let's not even worry for a second about unlocking the value. Let's start with, where do I go to pick up a key? So if I'm someone that's sort of very traditionally managing my contracts and I recognize that there's huge untapped value, if I can start to do that differently, what's the one thing or the two things that I can do on a short-term basis when I get back to my desk and I'm ready to start making the change? Where do I start?
I think you've got two choices. One, I apologize for one of them, which is you could sign up to a course where we start talking about it, and it's something that we're doing as a business, Pod Procurement, because we're trying to help people get over that hurdle as to identify what is in the contract. What's it look like? So we run a course that just looks at the core business value out of all the different types of contract structures we've got out there so that people can start identifying them and then articulating. So that's one possible option, but I'm not trying to promote that. I'm just explaining that's what it is. The second option you can do is just stand back from your contract and think about what it is you're trying to achieve as a business. For example, you'll know straight away if you're, when you're procuring something, if your business knows exactly what it wants to procure and it wants to get the best price. Now, we all hate the word price, but we also understand that's what the business is saying to us because that's what it thinks it we can relate to. So what you're really talking about there is replace the word price with maximizing savings. It sounds like a very small change, but it's a fundamental change because when you maximize savings opportunity, that's not price. That's actually looking at the wider aspect of quality and performance, and obviously the price was in there, but we're starting to elevate the conversation. So when we've got savings opportunity, we've got things like respond to market change, which is another way for saying the business wasn't really sure what it wanted to do. Well, that's because the business doesn't know what's coming. So you're talking about elevating that conversation to look at the dynamic markets, the flexibility. And when you start looking at your contracts and listening to your business leaders and what they're trying to say, beyond the item they want to purchase, listen to what they're trying to achieve with it. That will give you the clue as to what your contracts are actually already doing or need to do.
And perhaps another place to start is actually in your answer, in when you said we need to think about and talk about what the contract means to the business. Even that's a change in mindset, because in the past, I think, and I'm speaking from a procurement perspective, but we've looked at it as, what does this contract allow procurement to do? What does this do for procurement to achieve our goals? And then we have to make this leap to help the rest of the organization connect us making our goals with them achieving their goals. When in fact, if we can, in a way, cut out ourselves as the middleman and go straight to accomplishing what the business as a whole is trying to do, we don't need to make that additional leap. The communication gets easier. Realizing the value and recognizing it in operating results gets easier because we've simplified things and we've taken a higher level perspective. Do you think that's fair?
Absolutely, yes. That's an excellent point, because if you think about the world we work in is all, it's all about me. It doesn't matter how much you want to think it isn't. Everyone is very self-centered, and it's a fair assessment, even though we don't really like to admit it, but it's what we do. When we're looking at a contract, we look at what's in it for me. What we're talking about here is changing that mindset. It's not about what's in it for me, because I don't demonstrate value to you when I'm focused on me. If I want to demonstrate value to you, I have to focus on you. I have to think about you. So rather than say, what's in it for me, I have to think about what's in it for you and how does this help you? And if I can then share that information with you, I'm starting to provide you with value.
So for anyone that's interested in reading Mike's book, it's The Pod Model, the mutually beneficial model for buyers and suppliers, which enables an increase in profit through commercial collaboration, and it is available on Amazon as well as in the IACCM bookstore. I'll make sure there's a link to it, as well as the IACCM research that we've mentioned on today's Blog Talk Radio episode page. Mike, thank you so much for your time today.
Kelly, it's been an absolute pleasure. And just one last comment I'd like to make. I'd like to make sure that we all understand something. I would say this is not a good time to be in procurement. It is not a good time to be in procurement. I would say it's a great time to be in procurement. Why? Because we have all this untapped value that we're sitting on today, more value, as I said at the beginning, than any other department in the company. The only thing that's stopping us is just articulating the value. It's a very small step. So I think this is a great time to be in procurement. I'm looking forward to seeing where it goes. So thank you very much, Kelly.
You're welcome. And to that point about communicating more and improving the position of the field as a whole, conversations like this one are a great place to start within your network. So we also thank everyone that has joined us today for this BMP Radio podcast. Please do feel free to share your comments and feedback on this conversation, as well as to share it with anyone from your network that you feel would benefit from the information.